Studying the book of Daniel, and I wish I was inside Todd's lesson in Sunday school this morning, something that kind of went along with what I was been studying myself, and I want to hear what he said that I have to correct, so I'm just going to have to guess and correcting everything he said in Sunday school today. No, I'm just kidding, we'll let Gary do that when he gets back for Sunday school. We talked this morning about it's not about Daniel. We need to keep that in mind when we look at the book of Daniel. It's not about Daniel. It's about what? Or who? It's about Daniel's God. And I just encourage you tonight to let God be God. And I was thinking, I had a number of messages. I've kind of conglomerated them all in one, a number of thoughts tonight. The message this morning I talked about, it's not about Daniel's family. It's not about his upbringing. It's not about his friends. It's not about his good looks and wisdom and knowledge. And it's not about his purpose. It's not about his personality. It's not about his diet, even his prayer and prophecy. It's about his God. But I do look at all those things, and I'm challenged by this one thought from this morning's message. We need to do those things to give God a chance. Did you catch that? If we're not praying, we're not giving God a chance. If we're not seeking Him, if we don't have the desire that Daniel had, we're not giving Him a chance. And we need to give God a chance to work in and through us. I was going to go back and go through all of those, but I'm just going to mention that this morning. And I look at Daniel and see that he taught us what it is to rise above our circumstances. So much of our life we live under our circumstances, under our conditions, and rise above that. And find a purpose in your heart and let God remake your heart, purpose in your heart. Seek God in prayer. Seek God in the Word. Seek God in obedience. Seek God in church. And now I'm going to get to Daniel here in a little bit, but I've got a page of introduction and then some Bible verses. So let me get through the page of introduction here. Number of years ago, I was actually thinking about this, and I saw, is Amy in the nursery tonight? She was over here. Now she's gone. She already got offended and left. But she's got a baby brother named Matthew that just turned, I think I heard 47 this week. Do you know, Todd? 45, something like that. 45 sounds more like it. I'm trying to put the years together because I was thinking of this. There's a well-known evangelist that I knew personally, and I was trying to get the time together. In fact, he used to come to our church quite often. I understand he was at this church once or maybe twice years ago also. When I first got saved and got involved in church, it was our pastor's 25th anniversary at the church, and we sent them on a tour to him and his wife, a trip to the Holy Land with this particular preacher who was known for two things. Well, he was known for one thing, especially at that time. He had the entire New Testament committed to memory. You rattle off a verse or name off a reference, and he could tell you what the verse says. Anywhere in the New Testament. And he was working in the Old Testament at that time. But he began to focus his entire ministry on prophecy. Prophecy became his big thing. I remember Matthew being a newborn baby because he kind of stepped out of it. Instead of coming to local churches, he was launching a big, wider ministry, and he was going to have a nationally syndicated television program, and he was going to skip over the radio and need to raise a lot of money. So in order to do that, he had to involve a lot more churches than the type of churches that he once pastored and once was involved in. So he started having the meetings in motel lobbies and inviting all different kinds of churches. And I remember going to one of those churches, and Matthew was a newborn baby, and they were holding him on his lap and just enjoyed the time with Matthew. That's how long ago it was. So Matthew's an adult now. But I was thinking of that, and then I saw my brother yesterday and was asking him about that. I noticed a couple of things back then. And one was prophecy can become a big distraction. And then maybe the more important lesson that I learned, and I realized this a couple of years into my Christian life, that When I outgrow the local church, I outgrow God's will. I can guarantee you every time in every ministry I look at, when they outgrow the local church, they outgrew God. And they stepped out of God's will. Don't ever let anything take the place of the local church. And I'm going to get to Daniel here in a minute, but when we talk about prophecy, if we study prophecy for the sake of knowing, quote and unquote, what's happening, it's like studying doctrine without it changing our lives. We can know all the doctrine. We can know all the right answers and the predictions of prophecy, but if it doesn't change our life, we're missing the whole purpose. The purpose is to conform us to the image of Jesus Christ and to give us a love and a zeal for the work of God, to let Him transform our life, our spirit. And even when we talk about prayer, that's something that God has stirred in my, I guess this is something that comes with age too, to pray more than ever before. But if prayer does not change things, it's really just another religious exercise. And the thing that changes is my life first. And when we think of prophecy, there's a couple key thoughts that each of these could be a message, and I just wanted to give them to you to think about, because if you're around long enough, you see Christian fads come and go, kind of, it gets kind of humorous, actually, because the things that are new and exciting, people think, oh, we just discovered this in the Bible. Yeah, I remember they discovered that about 30 or 40 years ago, too. And you go back another 100 years, if you do any reading, you'll find out they discovered it back then, too. It's nothing new, but it is presented, packaged a little bit different. But everybody years ago had it figured out how everything was going to fall into place. I mean, everything was ready. It just had to snap your finger. All this is going to happen, that going to happen. And two things in the last 25 years completely turned all that upside down. One of them was September 11th. That introduced us to a whole another ball game. Wait a minute. Nobody saw that coming. And then COVID was another thing. I used to see things that was the year 2020. And there was kind of a joke going around amongst preachers that our theme for the year was have 2020 vision. But then a month into that year, well, nobody saw that coming. I mean, it completely changed our whole idea and understanding of prophecy that we thought we had figured out. With all the prophecy gurus. But here's another thought that I want to preach on this sometime, but I'm just going to give it to you now when you think about this, and I'm not going to take time to expound on it like I would like to. I never thought Laodicea would look the way it looks today. And I never thought that I would be so comfortable living in Laodicea. That's a whole message right there. And I'm not talking about, I'll just give you a hint here. Not talking about the lukewarmness and the coldness and the indifference. I'm talking about I'm right and you're wrong. And the self-righteousness and the self-exaltation. And I'm not listening to anybody because I already know the answers. There's some things to think about when you think about prophecy. But I want to look at this concerning Daniel tonight when we talk about the prophet Daniel. And I like this about the book of Daniel. I used to look at the book of Daniel this way. Well, a couple of people have said this when we started in Daniel, when we even announced that we were going to do Daniel. I like the first half of Daniel. Isn't it exciting? Linda, I'm not embarrassing you. She's the last one that said that to me. She's not the only one. I love looking at Linda when I'm preaching, by the way. I know somebody's following and somebody's paying attention. I love the first part of the book because it's so exciting. There's so many great stories in there. But then that second part, I thought, what in the world are we talking about? That's like reading Ezekiel. Well, what is that all about? By the way, Ezekiel preached the same time as Daniel, and he was a crazy man, to put it lightly. I want to go through the book of Ezekiel, but I'm afraid to touch that one and to look at his messages that he preached, because you talk about somebody crazy. That was Ezekiel. He was a street preacher in Babylon while Daniel was preaching in the castle to the kings and the rulers of the land. I look at this, and God put it that way for a reason, because, and this is the message I want to share with you tonight, God builds a prophet before he builds a prophecy. It's not about Daniel, it's about God. But God had to bring Daniel to the place where he could use him before he could give the prophecy that he gave to Daniel. Much like the book of Revelation, God built John and put John, had him boiled in water first, had him exiled to the island of Patmos, and there he began to work in John's life and gave us the book of Revelation. God builds a prophet before he gives us the prophecy. Now, if you look back in Daniel, and I know I've emphasized this a lot and gave you some things to look at Wednesday night, and Todd talked about some of this in Sunday school, but Daniel was born during the reign, during the revival years of Josiah, if you go back to the kings of Judah in Jerusalem. And at that time, in fact, it was just before Josiah became the king in Judah and brought in this last great revival before the land went into captivity. There was another preacher that rose up named Jeremiah. And Jeremiah, the entire time that this great revival was taking place in Judah and Jerusalem, Jeremiah was preaching the judgment of God's coming. God's going to wipe out everything here. God's going to destroy. Well, you talk about Debbie Downer. What is wrong with this guy? Man, take a chill pill, Jeremiah. What is wrong with you? Don't you see? Everything's going great. Everything's wonderful. We're having a great revival. And then that great revival came, but Jeremiah was still, you can see why nobody wanted to hear his message. Not only enemies, but not only God's people didn't even want to hear him. He was ignored. He was hated. He was ridiculed by most of his hearers. Now, Daniel was born when Jeremiah was older, and now Josiah is having this great revival, and that's the time frame when Daniel was born and reared, no doubt, I believe, by godly parents, and you can see even by his name. We talked about some of that this morning. And then when Daniel became an adult, now think of this, in Bible times, when you were 13, you were an adult. You now made adult decisions. Can you imagine a 13-year-old making adult decisions today? Can you imagine a 30-year-old making adult decisions today? I'm not sure if that could happen. Daniel was a young teenager, we would call today. That's something that we've invented, because we want to hold on to our kids longer, than is necessary, but that's a whole nother story. But he was taken captive as a young teenager. The last time he saw his parents, last time he saw his home, last time he saw everything that he was familiar with, last time he saw the temple that hadn't been destroyed yet. It wouldn't be destroyed till he was in his 30s, sometime later. But he never would go back to Jerusalem again, as far as we know, to see that temple and to see his homeland. He became a man during the reign of Jehoahaz and Jehoiakim. And Jehoahaz and Jehoiakim were the children of Josiah. Excuse me, got a Josiah in my throat, or a frog in my throat, or something. They wanted to do right, but they didn't know the God of Josiah. And just like in America today, those that want to do right don't know God. Our Constitution doesn't work without the God that America once recognized. They didn't all worship that God, but they at least recognized his existence and recognized his authority. He was taken captive at that time, and he was reprogrammed for 3 years. He was given a new name, taught a new language, went to a different school, taught a new philosophy, taught about a new religion, everything. He became a model student in Babylon. Then he graciously, and I emphasize that, and I read the book of Daniel, and this always intrigued me, he graciously challenged the king. He didn't rise up a rebellion, kind of a half-cocked rebellion like a lot of people think today, we would rise up and overthrow the government. We don't have the character to establish a government like we once did in this nation many years ago. When we look at and this is true of anything. I'll give you a couple examples here. When we look back on the events of our life, especially when you get to be old. Ken told me the other day, he was telling me about somebody, said it's an older lady. I mean, she's got to be at least in her 50s. Thanks, Ken. When you get to a, when you good to see you tonight. when you get to a certain age, when you look back over your life, everything kind of time kind of loses its value, the sequence of time. Doesn't that? Do you agree with that? And I remember when my wife's grandmother actually, and that's even something when her grandparents become my grandparents after a while. When grandma died, grandpa said, "I don't remember a time before we were married." I'm kind of getting to that place, but I can't remember not being married to her. And he was just such a gentle man. It was kind of hard to mourn with him. When we look back, events become very blurry as far as the sequence. It seems like, and in my own life, in my own situation, it seems like I got saved and immediately started living for God. But in reality, when I go back there, I realize the first 6 months or so of my life, I was a complete jerk and an idiot in trying to share the gospel. Hello? But I kind of try to forget that part, don't we? I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what I was saying. I thought, man, that preacher got up and he let me have it. If I'm going to win my parents the Lord, I'm going to have to let them have it. Dad, you're going to die and go to hell. You're going to split hell wide open. That's not the right way to witness to your parents, by the way. I wasn't even bold enough to say that. I'd write notes and send it to them. That's even worse yet. You talk about an idiot. That was me. You look it up in the dictionary and there's a picture of me with my leisure suit in my high school years. No. I was still at that time a lust-driven, self-centered, self-righteous jerk as a new believer, to put it mildly. And that was a time I'd like to forget. And after God dealt with my heart, I would say probably 2 or 3 years into studying the Bible and getting a hold of God and learning to pray and learning to study the Bible and learning to grow in the Lord, I look back and that's when I started to try to rebuild that relationship and reverence and respect and honor to my parents that should have been there all along. But I look back at Daniel's life. And we look, and all the time I've ever read Daniel, it looks like, well, he went there, he did this, and just looking at the time sequence. And I realize every Bible character, we're not told a lot about Daniel's personal life, his life before Babylon. We're not told about his family other than the one statement or two statements made at the beginning of the book. But if every Bible character you study, you find out there was a time of growth in their life. But Daniel, I think it was those 3 years. They said, we're going to put you in the house of the Babylonians, the Chaldean school of religious knowledge for 3 years. And I personally have come to the conclusion, I don't know, I'm probably wrong with this area. You probably know more than me anyways. I think that he probably, after 3 years, he realized, you know what? We've had about all this we can take. And he developed a walk with God and a personal relationship with God and the grace of God, and God began to move in his life. You look at Moses, for example. How long was he in training? 40 years in Egypt in the school of the Egyptians, knowing the best school. And then God said, okay, that's ready to go. No, we're not ready to go. You go out in the wilderness for 40 more years. 80 years old he was before God began to use him the way God intended to use him. You look at the Apostle Paul, and you think, boy, he just got saved and started preaching. And if you read the book of Acts, but without studying it, you'll find out that he even mentions in Galatians that I spent 15 years in the desert studying and being taught by the risen Savior. That kind of messes up some people's theology. And Peter, the great leader that he was, God had to break him before he could remake him and humble him and make him a new person before God could use him the way he desired to. But what I'm saying, just like any Bible character you study and anyone that's ever been used of God, you know, we look back and say, oh yeah, I was saved one day and the next day everything started falling into place. Did it work that way for anybody in their life? sure didn't for me. Boy, I'm struggling with this. And by the way, the more I think I've conquered, the farther I think I've gone, the higher that mountain gets that I'm still climbing. I'm going to realize I've got a long way to go. But I'm going to look at some things concerning Daniel tonight. Make some observations and conclusions from this first chapter and something about this prophet that God made. God builds a prophet before he gives the prophecy. And there's something about God's building the man Daniel. Look at Daniel chapter number 1. We've got to get in the Bible before we're done tonight, all right? Daniel chapter number 1 and beginning in verse number 7. Now unto the prince of the eunuchs gave name, unto the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name Belteshazzar. Remember what those names mean. Let me just mention them quick. You might have it written in your Bible as a study Bible. Daniel means God is judge. His name was changed to Belteshazzar. Most of the time through the book of Daniel, he's referred to still as Daniel, at least when he's writing it. Later in the book, he's referred to as Belteshazzar. Belteshazzar means Bel will protect, the false god of the Chaldeans or the Babylonians. And then Hanani, which means God is gracious, was changed to Shadrach, which means the inspiration of the sun. Another sun-worshipping religion, which most religions do worship the sun. And then Mishael, which means God is without equal, God is holy, we could say, was changed to Meshach, which means belonging to Aku, another false god of the Chaldeans or Babylonians. And then Azariah, which means the Lord is my helper, was changed to Abednego. That's not a bad Negro. You've heard that joke before, haven't you? 155 times. So I won't tell it 156 times. His name was changed to Abednego, which means a servant of Nego, which again was another false god. But in verse number 8, it says, but Daniel purposed in his heart. Again, we have no idea how much time there was between these verses. I have a feeling that it was probably more time. I know it was more time than I've thought of in the past. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Wherefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Daniel went out and put his fist down and said, bless God, I'm going to stand for Jesus. I'm going to take a stand. I ain't going to do this no more. Is that what he did? He had a different spirit than most of us that live in Laodicea would have. And it says in verse number 9, now God had brought Daniel into favor. That's not something that happens overnight. There's another reason why I think there was some time that went on here. And tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. Here's a man that hated the God of Daniel. Hated everything that Daniel stood for, but Daniel made a connection with him. Something like that does not happen overnight. That takes some time to generate that type of a friendship and a love. To favor and a tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. I see that Daniel had a different spirit. In fact, let's go ahead and look at some things concerning Daniel even later in his life. And it follows him all through his life and all through the book of Daniel. Go to chapter number 4. We're going to look at a few things that always intrigued me about Daniel. This is, by the way, one of the sections of scripture that God used in my life to break me, to help me to see that I'm going about this all wrong as far as witnessing to my family and trying to reach out to those that I love and those that I'm praying for their salvation. And chapter number 4, I want you to see in just a few verses. And I'm not going to read the whole story. We'll get to the story eventually here and the visions and the dreams that Daniel. But in verse number 8, Daniel demonstrated something. But at the last, Daniel came in before me, whose name was Belteshazzar, that's his Babylonian name, according to the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And Nebuchadnezzar still does not know God. And he's talking about God, that this God of Israel is the same as all the other gods. But he noticed something's different, not about the gods, but about Daniel. And in whom the spirit of the holy gods, and before him I told the dream, saying, O Belteshazzar, master of the magicians, not musicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in thee, and no secret troubleth thee. Tell me the visions of my dream that I have seen and the interpretation thereof. Now, this is not the first connection Daniel's had with Nebuchadnezzar. He knows something is different about Daniel. And something different not only about Daniel's spirit, his attitude, but there's something different and unique about Daniel's God. Before God can build the prophet and give us the message of salvation, God's got to build, before the prophecy, God's got to build the prophet. And God's building a prophet before he gives a prophecy. And then in chapter number 4, down to verse number 18, look at this. I dreamed, and this dream I, King Nebuchadnezzar, have seen. Now thou, O Belshazzar, declare the interpretation thereof. For as much as all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known unto me the interpretation, but thou art able, for the spirit of the holy gods. And notice it's still small g. And Nebuchadnezzar still not recognized the difference between Daniel, Daniel's God and his gods. And in verse number 19, this is a great verse. Verse number 19, then Daniel, whose name is Belteshazzar, was astonished for 1 hour. He was speechless. His jaw dropped to the ground. He couldn't say anything. He was brokenhearted. There were no words that he could speak. You ever been to that place? We're in such deep grief that there are no words that you can say. All you can do is be quiet. You can hardly hear your breath. I mean, it's all you can do just to breathe. Daniel was astonished for 1 hour, and his thoughts troubled him. The king spake and said, Belteshazzar, let not the dream or the interpretation thereof trouble thee. Belteshazzar answered and said, my Lord, the dream be to them that hate thee, and the interpretation thereon to thy enemies. Nebuchadnezzar, there's nothing. Everything that God told me, I would hate to see this happen to you. You see, Daniel had a genuine love and compassion toward Nebuchadnezzar. Now keep in mind who Nebuchadnezzar was. He was the one who destroyed Daniel's homeland. He was the one that took Daniel from his home, tried to re-educate him, gave him a new name, took him as a captive, as a prisoner, despised him and his religion and his God. But now Daniel had a love. Didn't Jesus say something about loving even your enemies? Daniel had more character than anybody I've ever known personally, more character than I have personally, to love those that hate you, those that despitefully use you, to bless them and curse them not. Daniel went beyond that, and he was broken because he saw what was going to happen to Nebuchadnezzar. And if you know what happens in the next chapter, Nebuchadnezzar lost his mind, and eventually he came to God and humbled himself before God, and God restored not only his mind, but restored his kingdom to him again. But go ahead in chapter number 5, and I want you to see this. Now we're under a different king, Belshazzar. I just want to put a T in there. Belshazzar. And we'll go in later what the connection was with him, Nebuchadnezzar. It says his father, but is more like grandfather or great-grandfather. Belshazzar was now on the throne. And every time I read this chapter, I think of my pastor preaching this, Belshazzar's Beer Bash, but that was the name of his message. And I thought, that's a neat message. That's a neat title for that chapter. Belshazzar was now the king. In verse number 12, and of course, in this chapter, he drank wine and got drunk and had a drunken fest and a festival and blasphemed God and brought in the vessels of the house of God. And he saw handwriting on the wall, and we'll get to that chapter eventually. Most of you are familiar with that story. But just in verse number 12, as the queen came to him and said, "For as much as," he's describing to him, in verse number 11, she comes to Belshazzar and says, "There's a man in thy kingdom in whom the spirit of the holy gods," still she's using the small g, "in the days of thy father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, was found in him, whom the king Nebuchadnezzar, thy father," or great-grandfather, whatever the case is, however you want to define that, we'll get to that later, "I saw thy father made master of the magicians and astrologers and Chaldeans and soothsayers," in verse number 12, "for as much as an," what? "Excellent spirit." You know, the other person in the Bible, the only character in the Bible that says that of is Daniel. In fact, he's going to say it again. He was of an excellent spirit. He had an excellent, a perfect, an upright, an outstanding spirit, or we would use the word today, attitude. It didn't matter what you threw at him, he always had a smile on his face. He was always rejoicing. It didn't matter how bad things were, he was rejoicing in the Lord. He knew what Paul was talking about later when he said, "Rejoice in the Lord always." And again, I say, rejoice. "Let your moderation be known to all men. The Lord is at hand." God is still in control. There is an excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding and interpreting dreams. And I'm just going to stop there. We'll get to that story when we get to chapter number 5 and jump ahead to chapter number 6. This is now Daniel serving in chapter number 1. He said that he served until the days of Darius. Darius was the king of the Medes. Daniel's an old man now. Much older than me. I mean, he is a really old man. He's in his 80s, all right? He's not just an old man being in his 50s. He's in his 80s now, most likely. And in chapter number 6, we see that Darius the Mede is on the throne, and Darius elevated Daniel to a special position the first couple of verses, and this is why in verse number 3. "Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because an excellent spirit was in him. And the king thought to set him over the whole realm." Another pagan king, another godless king, saw in Daniel something that you couldn't help but to see. He had an attitude unlike anybody else. His spirit was unlike anybody else. And there was no reason Daniel should have that spirit. After all he had gone through, if anybody had an excuse to have a bad attitude, anybody had an excuse to have a bad day, Daniel had a bad life. I mean, everything was going bad for him, but he decided, "I am going to serve God, I'm going to live for God." And I don't know where the exact point was where he came to that time. I think it was some years after he went into captivity, and after he was learning the language and the understanding of the Babylonians, and said, "That's enough, we're going to stand for God." But he did it in the right way instead of the way we would do it. So the way I would do it. I'm not going to go in and crash my hand against the table and say, "This is the way it's going to be now, bubs." He would have been dead by the end of that chapter. Instead, he came with the right spirit and the right attitude. I just want to share just a couple thoughts and I'll be done. I love sports, and I know some of you secretly were watching the game last night. Right? Well, we don't watch football anymore. You were watching last night. Hey, my favorite preacher used to preach against, he's in heaven now, so he doesn't know any better now. He used to preach against professional sports in general. Anyways, I won't get into that. I understand there's a lot of foolishness that goes along with that and everything else, when I grew up, I've shared this with a couple of people recently over the last couple of days, that when I grew up and as a teenager, the only thing that I cared about was sports. That was life. If we're talking about some schools that dropped all the extracurricular activities, try to say that again. I'm not going to try. From their schedule because of financial reasons. So they, instead of the teachers going on strike, they just didn't care about the kids. But we care about the children, right? So they said, no sporting events or anything. And I thought, if I was in those schools, I would have just dropped out. There's nothing to go to school for now. That was my life. That's all I lived for. That's all I really cared about. So when I got saved, I realized that that's the first God that's got to go. So I just got rid of it for a long time. And now I watch it and I can take it or leave it. I'm usually watching it and reading something, or my wife will say I'm usually sleeping, but she has to turn it up some because I'm snoring too loud. But the good thing is when there's a replay, they show it so you can catch the whole game. But anyways, I say that just to say that I love sports. And some of the greatest lessons I've learned in my spiritual life have been applied because of things that I learned in sports growing up. And then I just want to give you three principles that I think are very important that fit right along with Daniel. And I'm thinking of Daniel, and I'm thinking of my life and how God worked in my life and continues to work in my life. And the three principles, I'm going to call them the spirit of a poor sport. The spirit of a poor sport. Or the spirit, the wrong spirit that Daniel could have had. We could call it the spirit of the ungodly believer. But I see it in sports as well as in church. Number one, thinking that the scoreboard tells the only story. Thinking that the scoreboard tells the only story. That's the idea of every time I talk about the ministry to, it doesn't matter if I'm talking about preachers that I know or preachers that I don't know or preachers of whatever denomination, stripe, color, whatever. One of the first questions is going, how many of you run in church? Are you growing? That mentality of growing. As long as our score is going up, as long as our attendance is going up, everything's all right. There's a whole lot more to it than that. There's something in sports about having the right spirit, having the right testimony. One of my brothers was a coach for years, and I would take my boys to games once in a while just to watch him because I knew, though he wasn't, says he's a believer, I'm not, whatever, that's beside the point, but I wouldn't agree with him in some things as far as religion and politics now, but that's beside the point, but I appreciate the spirit that he demonstrated on the basketball court. And he took his basketball team downstate, I think, 3 different years. I think they might have won it 1 year, but they were in the state finals a number of years. And every time they went down there, they won the sportsmanship award because they had a good attitude. Even when they lost, they showed good sportsmanship. I remember watching my big brother play basketball in high school. That was before they had the three-point circle. You couldn't get a three, but he would shoot a lot of three-point shots only when he got mad. When he got mad, some folks would throw a fit, start throwing things around. No. He would get mad because his tongue would stick out the side of his mouth. And boy, when he had his tongue sticking out, get in the ball. And let him get down in that corner because he's going to shoot and it's going to hit nothing but net every time. And as long as let him get mad at whatever he wants, just let him. And I saw that as a kid. I thought, that's what we ought to respond with. That's how we ought to respond. That's how we ought to react. But thinking the scoreboard is the only thing what are we doing for God? Well, the attitude is the most important. And that will leave a longer and more lasting impression. How do we react when things don't go our way? Do we pout and throw things around and slam doors and yell at people and cuss people out? Or do we realize, hey, I might be winning on that scoreboard, but I'm going to win in my testimony. Hello? Then I love this one. This is one of my favorite things. Every time I go to a game, I think of this one. The spirit of a poor sport, secondly, is complaining about the referee. Oh boy, we're good at that, aren't we? Let me tell you about a football game I went at. I go down to the sport. I went down yesterday because I can get in free. And I don't really go to watch games. I just go to talk to people. A few months ago, I went down to a football game and I was visiting with people and none of us were watching the game. But all of a sudden there was a whistle blown. We looked out in the field and there was a flag blown. They said there's a penalty against Amboy. And everybody around me, nobody was watching the game. The ones who were trying to watch the game couldn't even see it from where we were. And immediately, everybody all around, "Oh, come on, ref, what are you talking about? Are you blind? Did you see what happened there?" Wait a minute. What are they watching? What in the world? And the truth is, and by the way, when I go to watch sports, I watch the referee as much as I watch the players. I kind of like to watch the referees and get to know them and whatever, but I have a lot of respect for those guys because I tried to do it once. I thought, I can't do that. But anyways, when we complain about the referee, that sets us up to learn to complain about everybody else that's in charge. And it teaches us to complain about God when things don't go our way. Doesn't matter if he made the right call or not, but we're upset because it didn't go our way. If that flag goes, it ought to go against them, not against me. And we get upset. We get all worked up over that. About our situation, about what we're going on. Instead of, and try to teach young people, and a good coach will teach his young people to play the game that the referee is calling. If you're playing basketball and you play it like a man and you knock people over, no blood, no foul, that's the way men play basketball. That's why I quit playing. if you play that way and the referee lets you get away with it, keep doing it. If he calls a foul every time you look at somebody cross-eyed, don't look at him cross-eyed anymore. Remember, that guy's in charge of the game, not you. Not mama sitting up in the grandstands and daddy talking to somebody out there complaining about every call and complaining about the referee, complaining about our situation, complaining about the call is what it means to be poor in spirit. Rather than taking, hey, maybe they made a wrong call. You know, I thought now that they got the instant replay, I thought that would take care of all the wrong calls. It's made it even worse. Now, did you see that? I saw it. We saw it. How come they didn't see it? And of course, we're always right and they're always wrong. And that mentality is carried over in our spiritual realm, complaining about our situation, complaining about how God's calling the shots. How come that didn't fall in my favor? Why did we get the penalty? We're right. They're wrong. And then this is another one, and these are just three major things that I see in the sports realm and the spiritual realm as well. Turning against my teammates. Turning against my teammates. Whether we're talking about family members, church members. I remember playing football in high school. Something that I'll never forget. It just had an impact on me. We're a team that practiced. In fact, I think it was late in the season. We've been playing together all season. We've been working together as a team. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the game, in the huddle, I can almost picture the yard line. I know the two guys. One of them was one of my good friends. The other one, of course, they're all my friends. But one of them was somebody that was my wife's cousin. He and I were good buddies. And we were, all of a sudden, these two guys got in a fist fight in our huddle. Do I need to tell you we lost that game? Because here's two team members fighting against each other. And I'm stepping there and trying to break these guys up. Wait a minute. They're the team we're fighting against, not each other. And we had a good team, by the way. That was one of the two or three games that we lost all year. Because we started focusing, well, you do, and this was the thing that I heard. You do your job. No, you're not doing your job. No, you're not doing that right. You're supposed to be doing this. And wait a minute. Is that what it's about? Or maybe this, and I've been on teams this way too. I know more than the coach knows. I can do better than him. I kind of joke about this. In basketball, in the junior high, I was a basketball star in our junior high team. I mean, I was the center, believe it or not, 4'10", and I was a center in junior high basketball team. I was a tall guy, I turned around and I could at least see the rim. We had a great record, and at the beginning of the year, our coach pulled us aside. We got a new teacher and a new coach. He said, and this guy, boy, he was a great athlete, and I thought, boy, we're going to do something now. We got a good coach, and he said, I want you guys to know that I don't play basketball. Wrestling is my sport. Guess how many games we won that year? Zero. But I was a star player, though. I think I made a couple of points once. We got whooped by everybody. just to make a long story short, by the time we got in high school, every one of us was on the wrestling team instead of the basketball team. But anyways, it was just kind of like, well, the coach didn't know what he's doing, and how are we supposed to do this? But when the coach doesn't know what he's doing, and of course people know more than the coach, and they think that they do, and there were folks know more than the pastor, and you probably do, I don't know, but turning against my teammates or my coach or thinking that we've got it all figured out, the spirit, that's a spirit of poor sportsmanship, and that's the spirit of an ungodly believer. But Daniel had an excellent spirit. He realized, and somebody asked the question, it was a good question. Why is it when Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, or Shadrach, and Meshach, and Abednego got thrown in the furnace, where was Daniel? Why wasn't he thrown in the furnace? The most likely answer, and again, when you think of the time lapse between those things, it wasn't the next day. Daniel was now a leader in the Babylonian Empire, and he was undoubtedly out of town. Away somewhere. We're not told where, but that would make complete sense. But they were team players. When they had a need together, they pulled together as a team and they said, let's pray about this. We're in this on the same team. We're working together. This isn't my team. That's not your team. And we're not at each other. We're working together. We're not concerned about winning the world over to God. We're just concerned about walking to God. We're concerned about surviving, to be quite honest. We're just going to do, and we're going to just have a good spirit no matter what happens. Hey, if we burn up in the furnace, so be it. We're going to still serve our God. And I think Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego can demonstrate, though it's not said of them, that they had that good spirit that they picked up from Daniel. They had that spirit together, that they had an excellent spirit, that God was making the prophet before he could give the prophecy. If God is going to use me, if God is going to use us, we're going to have to humble ourselves and come to him. And I know that you say, well, I've done that. I need to do it every day. I need to realize that I'm nothing. I'm an unworthy servant. And yet God can use me. If he can use a donkey to talk, I think he can use me. I think I might be smarter than a donkey. I'm not sure. God can use us if we would allow him to. If we would prepare ourselves to be used by him. It wasn't who Daniel was. It was who his God is. And our God is the same as Daniel. And Daniel had an excellent spirit and God was able to use him. Let's make sure our spirit is always right and always in tune with him. Doesn't matter what our circumstances are. Doesn't matter how the world's treating us. Praise God. We still have a great God. And we still love each other. And we're still moving forward. And we're going to work together until Jesus comes. Let's stand there.